Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are joined by our buddy. It's been a little bit, but known Jim for a long time. Jim Duquette, former Major League Baseball GM, part of the crew over at MLB Network Radio. Jim, Tiki, and Tierney, how you doing, man? What's happening?
Guys, what's going on? Hopefully you guys are staying safe and healthy like we are here.
We're hanging in, Jim. Now, before we bombard you with the heavy stuff about the labor strife, let me ask you this, because you've been around the game a long time. And 6 years ago today, Tony Gwynn passed away. And, you know, I remember the video with Costas where he sat down with Ted Williams. And, you know, I've never seen anybody square up a baseball as consistently and as hard on the barrel. Fastball, changeup, high, low, it didn't matter. To me, he was the greatest of all time. And there were other good ones like Carew and, you know, Boggs, of course, and Pujols and Miggy. But what he did hitting a baseball, can we just talk baseball for a second, please? I need a little baseball discussion.
I would love to.
How great was Tony Gwynn?
Man, I did not know that, and it's a really good memory. I mean, just in terms of the type of hitter he was, right? He could have sold out for power, and he didn't. You know, he was so true to what he was as a hitter, and his ability. You know, he was the one. I think he was the first that I can recall to look at videotape of his swing, break down his own swing, and do it the kind of advanced. Scouting reports that hitters would do on pitchers, you know, when people would ask him about how why he was so consistent, it was about his preparation, you know, every single night. I mean, he would bring a TV and a VCR back when people knew what VCRs were. He'd bring them on the road with him. Like, it was a job, but he loved doing it. He was obsessed with it, and you know, he wore out that hole in between third and short. There's no question. To me, there's Ted Williams and Tony Gwynn. Those are the two best.
Yeah,
he was phenomenal.
Yeah. Go ahead, how come more guys can't do that now, or that they just don't want to?
They get paid to hit homers, man. Mm. it's like the game. You know, the game has changed. You know, like other sports, sometimes you see it too. It's like, boy, if you don't hit home runs, then you're not getting paid enough. And guys will, you know, if you win a batting title, you're like, oh, that's great, man, that's awesome. You know? But if you hit 35 homers, you're paid almost twice as much.
Yeah. You know, speaking of getting paid, it feels like this is what this is boiling down to, from a player standpoint. BT and I were trying to figure out motives, and from the player's side, the motive seemed pretty simple. We want to get paid for what we do, and if it's prorated, because we're only going to play 30% of the game, give us 30% of our revenue, not 70% of 30%, like the owners are saying. But what are the motivations for ownership here? Because we're starting to get some inklings that there are a handful, or maybe close to two handfuls, that don't even want to play the season. What's from your perch, right? Yep, what are the motivations of the owners?
Well, it's a good question, because I have fallen on the side of the players on most of this. I think the owners, what they're trying to do is they're going to lose money this year. I don't think there's any denying that they're going to lose it. It's hard to know how much, because they don't share their books with everybody. You know, it's not like the other sports where they have to have full disclosure and they have a straight revenue share and they have a salary cap. Baseball doesn't have that. So, you know, when they disclose to the players, hey, we're losing money, and the players want to know how much, they give, you know, they don't give a full answer. and it gives the illusion, whether it's true or not, that they're hiding revenues. And I think to some degree they are hiding some of the revenues, especially when it comes to the regional sports networks that are out there. So I think what the owners are trying to do is limit how much of the losses that they're going to have in this particular season, even though they've enjoyed the riches over the past, you know, several years, and likely will enjoy them next year, because they're going to make modifications to their payroll this winter and next winter. They're going to be a profitable team, whether, you know, any way they can, you know, the next couple of years. And that's really, the players kind of know that, and they're trying to make sure that, you know, they don't take any more of a cut than they already have.
And to take this position the day after, or yesterday really was the day we get news they sign $1 billion deal for the playoffs for TV.
Yeah.
What a joke. Oh, it's disgraceful. It's a horrendous look. You know, and we're talking to Jim Duquette, former Major League Baseball GM, and he's an analyst, MLB Radio. So I was talking to Tiki, we started the show with this, and, you know, when Kennesaw Mountain Landis was voted in by the owners in 1920, and he held the post for basically 2.5 decades to try to clean up the stench from the Black Sox, that came with a set of complex issues, and, you know, Ford Frick had issues, and Bowie Kuhn had issues. Every commissioner has had issues, okay?
That's right.
Whether
that's
it's right. A labor strife thing, a drug thing, a downturn in the economy thing, fans losing interest. Every commissioner's had a problem, right? What's bothering me the most is that Manfred keeps stumbling on the easiest thing that you can control, the messaging. He is so sloppy. Now, listen, I don't know if you're going to co-sign this, Jim. I said yesterday, he just does not project enough leadership to be a number one. In my opinion, Rob Manfred's a number two.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that or no?
I mean, I think that's more than fair. What he has shown, rather than leadership in this situation, and part of this is, if you know, you kind of forget a little bit that he was a lawyer. He was not an owner, like Commissioner Selig was. The one thing everyone faults Commissioner Selig for the job that he did, but he did get consensus with the owners primarily because he was one of them. He was an owner, and so he could lead them. Hey, listen, I understand your point. But as a commissioner, I think this is the best for the sport. And sometimes he would take his opinion. It might be adverse to what the Milwaukee Brewers, which was the team he owned, it may be against what he would think if he was just an owner of a team. And so he gained respect from the owners. Commissioner Manfred, was a lawyer. He really, in this particular situation, what I'm told behind the scenes, he's saying, listen, he's not even giving his recommendation. He's giving, here are the options. What do you guys want to do? And I'll go forward and make that proposal to the union. Well, that's to your point. That's not being a leader. That is more of a number two type of position, an assistant. And what the sport needs is leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, Jim, it needs Bingo. Unity, right? If you go back and let history be a little bit of a guide here, the reason that the players made so many advances, you know, back in the day is because they were together, right? They were all screaming the same message, and it's why they gained some edge over ownership. How is unity now on both sides? Now, I know there's some dissenters that are saying let's cancel the season, but how is, like, ownership unity relative to player unity?
Yeah, Tiki, I think this is a fascinating point, because going into these negotiations, I think the owners underestimate, and this is you know, we've seen this in our sport before, where the owners underestimate the resolve of the players, and it's caused strikes, and we caused the cancellation of the 94 season. But they were fractured coming in a little bit, but from the very beginning, their resolve and their ability to stick together has been consistent, and I think it's surprised a lot of people, including some on the ownership side. And I'm starting to detect some fractured moments or owners. If you go back to even when Commissioner Manfred was first elected, you know, he had about seven owners back in the day that were against him. It wasn't a unanimous decision, and they had to have three votes before he was elected. And it was Jerry Reinsdorf from the White Sox, Tom Warner, that group from the Red Sox,
and five others that were against his candidacy at the time. And, you know, you hear bits, you know, I'm not in the room, so we don't know for sure, but you do hear some fractured opinions on the owner's side. And I wonder about that whole group, you know, if that's starting to kind of rear its ugly head again a little bit.
You know, we're talking to Jim Duquette, former GM, and he's been in the game for a long time. I shouldn't assume. I don't know how deeply you delved into this draft. I would think you did a little bit of draft work.
Yeah, we did the draft. Yep.
Because I know you usually do. I know this year is different.
Yeah.
Can you give us just a quick assessment, because it was totally different, just the five rounds and obviously signing bonuses no more than $20,000. Any sense of which teams really cranked it out of the park and maybe had some steals?
Well, I think that the teams that, you know, just the ones that picked at the top of each round, to me, are usually the ones that did well, and I think they did again, the Tigers in particular and the Orioles. It's not unusual. They had the most bonus pool money.
Yeah.
A sleeper team were like the Cardinals. They had a couple of really good high school picks that have upside, some projectability. But I think that, you know, the your point on the five rounds, it was a deep draft. So if you picked, like where the Yankees picked the catcher that they got, his name escapes me right now.
They drafted him twice. They drafted him out of high school back in the day, too.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that pick, where they were picking. And if you were picking where the Yankees were or a little further down, you could get a better than normal pick because it was a deep college draft.
Yeah.
And so guys that were even the Mets, when they got Pete Crow Armstrong, that type of player usually isn't there in this type of draft. He's selected, you know, in the teens. And so I think the teams that were in the 20s to 30s, they benefited a little bit more than they normally would in a typical year.
But, Jim, you mentioned the Tigers. You don't fundamentally have an issue. I know the kid could rake. But drafted a kid and then moving positions, like that's you don't really want to do that with the first overall pick too much, do you?
Well, no, you really don't. But I will say this. I talked to his college coach there at ASU, and he had a really good response to it, because I asked him that exact question ahead of time. Like, he looks like he's a good athlete. Can he play other positions? And listen, when we brought him in as freshman, we had three really good infielders, and he was not as good as the others, but he was really good. He just happened to be, you know, the one that we moved to first base. He could play some left field, but I would not hesitate to play him at third base. This was before he was even drafted. And then when they announced he's going to be a third baseman, you know, the Tigers, I'm like, oh, they listened to this. They listened to his college coach. He does have athleticism to him. I don't think he's going to be a big league third baseman, but I think he can be better than, let's say, Kyle Schwarber is in left field, as an example. He can play left or first. So yeah, I really like the kid overall.
I know he's got that easy righty power. Listen, Jim, nice to throw in a couple of actual baseball things in there.
This is
a mess. This is horrible. We hate it.
I miss talking baseball, guys.
I miss watching. I miss talking. I miss betting. I miss everything.
Yep, I hear you.
So listen, Jim, good having you, man. Good having you back on the show. Thanks a lot,
Jimmy.
Appreciate you having me on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.